Welcome to Creatives Grab Coffee, the podcast on the business of video production.
Creatives Grab Coffee is hosted by Daria Nuri and Kirill Lazarov from Labs Productions. Our goal is to share knowledge and experiences from video production professionals around the world. Whether you're a freelancer looking to start your own business or a seasoned business owner aiming to scale your company, this is the show for you.
Join us as we develop a community of like-minded creatives looking to learn and help each other grow. Welcome to the business of video production. Welcome to Creatives Grab Coffee.
Before we get started with the show, let's go over today's sponsors.
Do you have a shoot in Toronto? Do you need crew or a strong production partner to help you with your project? Labs Productions is one of the top production companies in Toronto and your go-to video partner.
With our strong creative skills and extensive network, we can help you achieve your goal. Labs Productions is able to offer you production services, white label services, or finder fees for project handoffs.
Reach out to us on our website at lapsproductions.com to learn more.
My name is Miran. Welcome to Canada Film Equipment. We are a boutique rental house based in Toronto. We are here to help you guys out with all production sizes. Feel free to contact us to get a quote if you are a production house and you're looking for lighting, camera packages, or lighting and group van packages. You can see our contact information in the link below. We're more than happy to help you guys out. Make sure you follow and subscribe to creativesgrabcoffee.com. Thank you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Matt. Welcome to Audio Process. We are a boutique audio company doing location sound, sound design, post sound, ADR, Foley. We service equipment. We do all your audio needs here in Toronto. We got you covered. Come on down, audioprocess.ca. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, and all of the other internet things to creativesgrabcoffee.com. They'll be waiting for you. I'll be waiting for you. And we're all gonna have a real good time.
And now, let's begin the show.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode. Today we got Daniel Kalija from Visual Production Agency. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. How you going?
Good, good. Okay, so let's start with the basics. Let's learn a little bit about you and how you got into the industry.
So it was quite a while ago. I ended up starting doing video when I was a teenager. I was into like the whole filming event stuff. I got quite young into filming like wrestling shows in Australia because my uncle was a professional trainer wrestler when I was about a teenager. And from there, I learned how to do like digital filming and editing. It was quite new back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I was fortunate enough to get sort of like a name to sort of, you know, get into the whole film industry from an event perspective, and then selling VHS tapes. So it was pretty new back then. And then I studied at multimedia at uni, did a bit of documentary work and this and that, and eventually got into the industry by just networking, really. I started working with the corporate sector only when I was 20 years old. And as a freelancer, learning like the ropes with filming, editing, voiceovers, working with other people, content create, you know, back then it was like my, you know, script writers and whatnot and producers. I grew my business and learned, you know, from other professionals.
And how long ago was this when you like first started like getting deep into it? So I guess like after about 20, uni, like what time range are we talking about?
We're talking 20 years ago. So I just turned 40 last week. So I'm, yeah, exactly. Okay. 20 years
now.
You
don't look it, man. That's some good jeans over there.
Thanks. It's just good studio lighting. Yeah.
Cool. So 20 years. And that's how it started. You started your business. Mm. Sorry. So yeah, you started your business. And okay. So tell us a little bit about like starting your business to now. Like what are... Give us some like history on that.
So I suppose the industry is quite interesting here. I mean, I suppose it's quite similar around the world. But I got to learn through working with other people in other sectors. So like the first guy I sort of worked with, he was working as a scriptwriter for OH&S videos, training videos. So I was fortunate enough to work with someone that was older than me, learned how to be in like corporate meetings and how to sort of sell a little bit. And then, you know, at the same time, I was learning other things like filming sports, weddings, marketing videos, interviews. And my dad, he was a professional photographer for a network when I was young. And so he helped me with lighting, and he sort of gave me sort of some ideas on how to make things look really great with video. Because I loved filming, but I didn't know anything about lighting. Then I had to learn about audio. So as a newcomer in the industry, I sort of learning on the way. I think we all do. It wasn't as simple as, like, you know, just turn on the camera, press record. Because I knew I had to, like, eventually get all these other things sort of put together in you know, as a combination. You know, when we talk about production, it's including editing as well. But my real passion was to create anything that looks good, and, you know, make that as best as possible when I was young. Because I guess back then it was very different. You know, it wasn't really a freelancer world. I was probably back then it was like one of few people in production doing corporate video and sort of freelancing. So I was very fortunate to, you know, get in the industry early and build those connections as well. It's just really learning from other people. And, you know, I also worked at a couple of places part-time to sort of meet and network with people. So I worked, you know, in my early 20s on a couple of TV shows, filming, editing, a bit of directing and producing. So that sort of gave me a bit of foundation as well of what it's like to work with a crew and work on pretty cool content.
And early on, when you get into the industry, it always varies depending on, like, kind of like what the barriers to entry are. Like, the reason there's so many now is because the barriers to entry are almost non-existent. Anyone can pick up a camera for less than $1,000 at this point and become content creator, start shooting video. And it's a whole different world now. But you said you've been doing this for 20 years. And everyone that we've talked to that has been around for so long, it wasn't exactly very cheap back then to get into video production. You know, I'm not even talking just the cameras alone. Like, even video editing software alone was almost $50,000 to $100,000. So kind of, how did you break into that, you know, like, in terms of starting up with those challenges back then?
Really good question. I think I broke in the industry when it wasn't so expensive. I sort of tapped into the digital market at the right time. So I graduated in 2005. So by the time it was 2006, I purchased my first camera, and my dad helped me get the loan. We ended up spending to be honest, back then, I think it was a great deal, $10,000 for a camera. You know, it was worth more. I mean, obviously now with inflation and everything, things are different. Like, you could see that $10,000 back in 2006 was a lot of money, especially for a 20-year-old. But I already had the good foundation of knowing that I had, you know, potential business coming through, because I already had, like, a job come through from the university I studied at, and they wanted to give me a budget of $5,000 to create a promotional video for them. So for one of their courses. And I'm like, my dad's like, you know, rather than hiring the cameras and spending all this money, why don't we just buy a camera, get the loan, and you can pay it off. I said, yeah, that's a really good idea. I'd rather have my own camera. So back then it was the HVR Z1P Sony HD camera. And I still have it here. I'll bring it out. It's cool. It's like, the handheld sort of decent sized cameras. It was mini DV tape, but it was sort of first of its kind to get HD. So Betacam and all that were like sort of phasing out, and mini DV tapes with HD and stuff were coming in, and they also, you know, obviously more broadcast stuff had the big discs. So, you know, there was a mixture of different sort of styles of cameras back then. But for corporate productions, weddings, you know, promotional and all that sort of stuff, these cameras were great. There was only a couple out at the time, and I got a lighting kit with that. I got a boom as well on top of that, and it was a really good kit to get started back then. And like I said, it was very new in the industry. Like, these cameras just came out, and there was no DSLRs. And that's another story. When I saw when the DSLRs came out, I swear
2005, wasn't that the what do they call
it? No, it was 2008. R5? It was 2008, Dario.
Yeah, 2008, 2009. I remember 5D. I literally, my heart skipped a beat. I never forget the first time I saw a footage from a DSLR. I looked at it going, what is this? Why does it look so cinematic? And I knew straight away the industry was going to change completely. Like, it was just like the first 5 seconds, I could not believe what I was seeing. So, you know, already being in the industry for a few years, I sort of got a feeling that, yeah, things are going to change up a little bit, especially the fact that the cameras were cheaper. So, it was a good start.
Like, saying that, did you make any preemptive moves saying that around the corner?
I did. I actually upgraded my cameras. So my next camera was the FS700, which was a slow motion, 100 frames per second, really great cinematic camera for Sony. That was state of the art when I purchased it. So that was my next big sort of move on my cameras. And then I upgrade audio. Look, I'm all about technology as well. I'm a tech geek. I love technology. Like, I reckon I spent more money on tech than, you know, people spent on friggin', you know, like investing in houses or something. I don't know. Like back then, if people said like, if you use that money to invest in property, I'd probably be a lot more, I'll be rich by now. I was one of those young and dumb guys who are like, ooh, that thing for $5,000 is great. I'm just going to buy it. That thing for $10,000 is great. I'm just going to buy it because I love tech. Yeah. even $1,000 of Bitcoin would have been fantastic back then. But no, you know, we didn't think about that stuff back then. Yeah, I know. So it's crazy how you think back now and go, gosh, what could I have done with that money? But I love technology. I don't regret it because I think that sort of helped me evolve into the industry because having for me the best quality of production really means a lot. And I've always been like that. You know, I see things and I go, gosh, that looks so old. You know, it's because a lot of people don't care for quality because they just think that the content is good enough. But no, I think quality and content, the whole thing comes together. It has to be good as a package. If it looks old, if it looks 10 years old, but, you know, people go, oh, that looks like an old video. Like, it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't look professional to me. So I always have been cutting edge. Like, I always loved spending money on good gear. It's probably a bit of a weakness of mine. I've upgraded from that camera. I also had another camera, which was a broadcast HD. It was a big, like, XTV camera. It was secondhand. It was worth a fortune when they came out. I was, back then, I remember in 2010 when I got it, it was all about size. This thing was massive. I wanted to look like we are the big production company. And then when the people came with DSLRs, I'm like, hey, guys, look at my big camera. And it was great quality. It was trying to, like, show off the size of this big monster, you know? We always try to do different things.
Did you add a matte box to the front?
Oh, yeah. I didn't even need one. It had its own. this thing was amazing.
I remember we were thinking of getting one. I was like, oh, Kirill, the clients will think we're really high-end if we add a matte box to the front of the lens.
That was Dario's first purchase early on that was, like, because he just got, like, the first expensive matte box that he saw in the store, and we could never make use of it.
Had like, no idea how to, like, put it onto the lens. It never aligned perfectly. I'm like, who made this thing? It wasn't cheap either. It was expensive.
It was, like, $800, and we still have it. No, it was, like, $1,000, I think, and we still have it.
Yeah, they're very pricey when they came out. The cages and the matte boxes to make your camera look bigger and beastier, especially with the DSLRs. But that camera there that I purchased was like an ex-Discovery Channel camera. Like, they use it for docos and that. So it was like a lot, like, you know, TV sort of news reporting camera, ENG style, which was, you know, it was cool to have. But it didn't last me long because, like, once the FS700 came out and the new Sonys came out with their real cinematic sort of sensors and whatnot, I love Sony, so I kept on using Sony's best technology. I think, I'm a tech geek. What can I say?
You mentioned that, you started in the scene pretty early on. So you're one of the few corporate production companies out there. How did you deal with the fact that over the years, like, more competitors started entering the scene?
Oh, good question. Early days, it was hard to know, because we didn't use Google as much. Like, I didn't advertise, you know, there wasn't really AdWords or anything like that. Once SEO started kicking in, I think this was back in sort of 2011, I'd say. It was probably a year where I really realized there was a lot more competitors coming out. It's because I started spending money on Google SEO. And back then it was very different. You know, you could use some overseas company to do, like, dodgy backlinks and, you know, you'd be first on Google. It was crazy. Like, you know, they used to ring you up saying, oh, would you like to do, you know, SEO? I'll put you on, you know, number one on Google right now. And it just happened. It was crazy, the stuff they used to get away with. And, you know, $300 a month, you'd be top on, you know, number one on Google. It was so cheap.
It was crazy.
Wow. And I'll never forget those days. It was cool. So I did win a lot of business, but I realized a lot of other businesses started investing in SEO. And that was the first part of that, sort of seeing the competitors sort of come into the scene. Now, I wasn't the type of person back then to go and have a look at what other people were doing because I was sort of stuck in my own world. because, you know, you're not going to go out and meet other producers as much or other production companies because you're sort of doing your own thing, you're busy. But when you go online, you get to see the whole swarm of it coming through because you say, hey, I'm getting outranked here. Who are these guys? Who are these guys? And I think the first hit of it happened in sort of between 2010 to 2013. Then it sort of stabilized a bit, and then I realized the biggest amount of newcomers came through during COVID, believe it or not, and just after COVID.
Oh, really?
Like, I think, yeah, the amount of, like, newcomers and new businesses that came, and a lot of them do come through freelancers. So freelancers that are really great at what they do, they'll say, you know what, I'm getting busy, I'm going to start my own agency, advertise as an agency. Some of them don't even have a studio, doesn't matter. You know, these days, you know, people work from home and, you know, a big swarm of newcomers come through or they've been in the background and haven't marketed for a while or haven't marketed at all. And then suddenly, bang, they're on Google. They're advertising massive spends on AdWords, massive spends on Google and, SEO, social media, Meta, the whole lot. So, you know, it's a combination of like a lot of people doing it at the same time, which I found the biggest swarm did come through that COVID period. I don't know why. Yeah. I mean, my assumption is that people needed more work and they needed to do something about it. So they decided to advertise.
Yeah, I think there was that. But also, when you think about it, during COVID, everyone was stuck at home, right? And
that's
anyone
right.
who was
yeah.
creating videos, all they were doing, the only kind of content that you could really create from the safety of your own home was product videos. And
yes.
there was a whole new market. I was kind of like seeing it grow like crazy. Like everyone was doing crazy beer commercials. And it's just like someone in his room with like a beer on a stick, just spinning it like very, you know, like kind of like a corn on the cob kind of style. But like the shot is like with a backdrop and it's like with
yeah.
these really dramatic sound effects and stuff like that.
But spec so, spots,
yeah.
right? Not actual
yeah.
work.
I mean,
yeah.
some probably did that as spec, you know, just for fun. And then probably, you know, people started to kind of fall in love with the idea of it, do more and
yeah.
more and more of it. And then
yeah.
that's probably where a lot of people at least got started and you know, thought, you
I
know
agree.
What, this is something we could actually do. So
true. And also the live streaming stuff as well. It was, I think it was
yeah.
big during COVID. I did get a lot of work in studio doing live streaming, but a lot of other people started doing that as well because it was needed during COVID. Editing.
Do you still see that
home.
Same that wave that you mentioned that came during COVID? Do you see that it's still there, or has it like died off?
It's hard to say. I think there's definitely more budget spend for marketing now from production agencies, similar to ourselves. I think that it's definitely more competitive now because there's variety. So I think it's a bit of a price war going on. It's basically, you know, how low can you go before it's not worth it? So, you know, I suppose depending on your crew and your overheads and stuff like that, and also the quality of production you produce, everyone's competing price. And, you know, at the moment, it's really a combination of different clients or prospects wanting that good balance between quality and price. You got to be really right there in the middle. It's not easy to know what the middle is sometimes, but I suppose everyone's in that same boat, because everything's risen, you know, you've got inflation, things have gone up. So our guys want to get paid more and we need to look after our people, you know, staff is important. So making that right balance between paying your guys the right amount versus how much you charge your clients is a hard one these days because the competition are looking at ways to reduce prices to keep in the market, and newcomers come in and they also want to get in the industry. So it's always a real gamble between what to sort of do with your rates. But I still believe that quality is important, and you know, you don't want to be racing to the bottom, because if you do, then basically you're just going to be doing it for nothing, you know?
Yeah, because if you figure out a way to do like say a $2,000 job for $1,000, then that
yep.
is now going to be the new standard, right? And then
exactly
where does it end at that point, right?
Like, yeah,
it's like I've seen shoots. We've all been on those shoots where for example, it's 3-4 cameras some guy brought to film everything, but it's just setting it up on a tripod somewhere, filming from there, setting up on another tripod, filming from there.
Yeah,
like the bigger budget would be 4 camera operators, but in reality, it's
yeah.
one, maybe 2 people. dealing with four or five cameras, you know, like there's a lot of those types of productions out there. And I don't like doing those. Dara and I don't aim to do that because there's a lot of challenges that come with that. You know,
there is.
Also, you can't promise that every camera shot's going to be
used,
like, done at the best of their abilities. Right. You know, it's a big challenge.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think having one camera, like using my FX9 now with really good quality lighting and audio, is better than having four cameras that are done pretty much half-assed. You just slap the camera on, chuck a couple of DSLRs in there with no proper, you know, sort of setup. What's the point? So I think there's a lot of that going on. But I suppose, you know, it's I don't like to compare because it's not good to have a, you know, everyone's got their own niche. And I think it's important that, you know, everyone does stick to their lane. I think if you say you do everything, it's probably not a good thing. It's also the fact that I think these days, you know, a lot of freelancers now are running these businesses in the industry on the side and work for other companies, and they can do a cheaper rate. So, you know, freelancers have become somewhat, you know, a competitor of the agencies because companies now go directly to freelancers. And a lot of my clients do that. And sometimes they have to because their budgets are a bit lower. And I get that. So I think there's a fine line between when a company needs an agency versus a freelancer, because a freelancer might not produce the content. They just film it and that's fine. So it's just finding that right balance between what kind of clients want the full package. You know, we can also, as an agency, just give them one part of it, which is just the film, you know, the camera operator or just the editing. But most of the time we do the whole thing. And it's a hard balance to know what's right in the industry now. And to be honest with you, I think production prices haven't changed in the last 10 years. If anything, some of the productions have to be cheaper now because there's a lot more people doing it. It's more accessible, cheaper equipment. So, you know, if you've got the best cameras, if you've got all these big expensive, you know, red cameras worth over hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you're out there charging, you know, $5,000-$10,000 a day for an operator, what clients are going to pay that? That's the thing. So these days it's like, it's not going to be possible anymore. It's different now. So having the right balance between gear, crew, what you can charge is a real art, I reckon, now.
Do you think because you mentioned there a lot of the clients are going straight to the freelancers now. Do you think they're just going to newer production companies that are just like more affordable? Because I'm trying to think here, like there's a lot of freelancers, but I feel like the clients would have a hard time finding the freelancers because a lot of them, it's like unless you're going around on Instagram or TikTok to find them, you probably don't have like...
It's interesting you say that. There are so many freelancers now. I mean, every second person now is a videographer. So someone knows somebody now. It's all based on network. So like, you know, someone's going to know someone that knows somebody. It's all about the referral now. You don't even have to spend money on advertising to get that sort of work. So if you're cheap enough and good enough to do it, you can get in the industry now, basically. And you, look, really, you got to think about it. You don't have to get a degree to be in the industry. You don't have to go and study for 5 to 10 years like a lawyer or a, you know, or an accountant or whatever it is. So you can just buy a camera, love what you do, start as a hobbyist, and then start a business. So it's not really something that's going to take years and years, years and years of studying to get in. So if you just start freelancing at a decent rate and buy the right gear, you can start up. Just have a couple of contacts. Sometimes one client can cut you through. I mean, that's how I started anyway. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just now that there's a lot more people doing it because, to be honest, how good is doing video production? I mean, it's like having a hobby and love what you do, but also, you know, running a business and intertwine that together. So, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, because here, I was trying to, when you're talking about like how the scene's changed on your side, I was trying to think of here and I'm like, have we noticed more people on the scene? And I think on, based on like my research with our own SEO, like I've noticed a few companies pop out, like starting like from the pandemic to now, that kind of like really popped out of nowhere. There's a couple, like very few though that I'm like, oh, okay, now they're ranking in the top pages. I'm like, I never heard of these guys before, but I haven't seen like a lot of like new companies, like, you know, where I can tell it's just like a freelancer or two. But I have noticed that like the groups where you would find freelancers, there's a lot of people applying. So I'm like, okay, there's a lot of people out there, but I don't know how are they getting direct to the, I was trying to think, like, how could they be getting direct to client? Because a lot of the times, like, if you're trying to search for these guys, like, you're not going to go through 50, 100 pages of Google, right? You're going to go through, like, first couple and then just find people through there. Unless you're going to be savvy and, like, go on social media channels and try to find people through I that. Think... But even then, you got to kind of have an understanding of what's good and what's bad. And then, and again, you're always dealing with people that...
I think it's a mix, sorry. I think it's a mix. Yeah, I agree with you. It's a real mix. Like during COVID, I think a lot of people saved a lot of money. So there was a lot of rebranding, a lot of business starting, and a lot of spend on advertising because there was money around. People said there was, I think in the industry, especially video, there was a lot more money going around during that time. When COVID, we had a lot of lockdowns in Melbourne. You probably heard it was crazy here. Absolutely insane. I was very, very fortunate to get good government contracts. So we're traveling around during the lockdowns. We did a lot of doco work, training videos, studio stuff. And it was all legit because we, you know, I've done a lot of government work in corporate in the past. We have those connections. And we also do a lot of marketing. But what I noticed is so many people saved a lot of money, including ourselves, to start new brands, spend a, you know, a ton of money on advertising. So like you said, all these companies just risen out of nowhere and had the spend to do that. So all of a sudden you're thinking, God, how do these people just pop out of nowhere, probably spending $5,000 a month on advertising? Like, how did that happen? Because there was money around. And that money lasted for a while. And to be honest, when you're ranking on Google with these production, like, you know, in this world, you can get some good clients. You just got to know how to advertise right, how to market yourself, have the right concept beneath you to actually put it out there and show the market.
But right, that's for like production companies, like smaller production companies. Like if you're talking like freelancers, like you said, where there was like an explosion of freelancers being available.
Yeah.
Really, the only way is word of mouth and referrals, because that's how we all started.
Yes.
We all started with mainly referrals in gaining business, right? So what's happening with them is kind of what happened with us early on. You know, we worked for some smaller companies, small businesses, individuals, you know, creating a little bit of content for them and then build a portfolio and then see where we expand from there. Whereas like, as Dario mentioned, there's so many people in the freelance world. It's not like a company is going to go and trust all their marketing spend on a random freelancer, right? Well, like that's the other thing people have to remember.
I think that, to be honest, what I noticed was also is that a lot of freelancers did have marketing spends because they were not just on their own. They'll team up with somebody. It'd be like two directors running a small production business that started up from nowhere. And that's what happened. So freelancers joined up as teams. It wasn't one person. It was a few or couple, whatever it was. Put some money together and actually advertise it. And that's what happened as well. I noticed a lot of like, you know, a producer and a camera operator came together and started a business. And it all exploded from there during COVID. And a lot of those businesses came around during COVID as well. So I saw a big change in it. And then that's obviously why the industry now has changed. There's a lot more niche productions. Like you'll find a company that's really good at doing like car advertising or, you know, real estate advertising or, you know, some of them like ours, we do a lot of everything, but depends. Not we don't do everything, but like, you know, the corporate stuff. Whatever it is, like there's more companies doing things that are niche, but also the fact that, like you said, they had the connections that maybe had that one client and help them really start up. I think we all did start like that, if you think about it. My first client was Rio Tinto or, you know, Vic Uni, which was when I was 20. And that really got me going. I paid my camera off in like a couple of months. I was really fortunate to start up and you know, in a good time.
Yeah. I guess for people like us, so we also were, well, to even make it to the stage that we're at is very difficult. Not to like boast, but like I think statistically, like most businesses fail within, what is it, 3 years or something?
Yeah, so not even.
The fact that we got 11 years here, 20 years over there.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. So yeah, I guess if there are a lot of these micro businesses around, like probably a fraction of them will last past like maybe the 5 year mark, right? And especially if like...
Yeah, I think...
Because doing creative depends. And like doing business are two different things, right? And when you try to merge the two together, it's pretty difficult. You gotta be able to adapt.
I feel like it's not production companies anymore. It's really content creators. It's changed again. You've got a swarm of newcomers come in, the young generation that are using phones, you know, really cheap cameras. That it's not about quality anymore. It's just creating content for socials at the real lower end. So, you know, something that's going to cost a few hundred dollars, something that we wouldn't do, but it's another industry where, you know, you can create an income because you're doing a lot of volume video. You know, small businesses, they don't have thousands of dollars to spend. So you've got this whole new swarm of production, really low-end production. And I look at it, go, oh, I can't do that. But you know what? There's a market for it. You know, there's some of the stuff's, you know, overblown, oversaturated. You know, the exposure's awful.
I've been seeing
the
that more often. You know, like, yeah, I've been seeing the content creators more often. But again, it's one of those things where it really is a race to the bottom because you just need a, like two phones, a power bank, and like... Exactly. Everyone can do that, basically.
Exactly.
So
can do, can and then you're a social media expert. Yeah, I'll give you an example. Right. And then you got to know your socials.
Mm. Yeah, like I remember in the wedding scene in 2022, that's when I started seeing it. And I know one of the first people that started that here, they were charging like $2,000 a wedding. And they had like 50 weddings that year. And then the year after, I saw another company do it. And I was like, what do you guys charge? They're like $1,000. And they're splitting it between two people. So one person would do first half of the day. The other person would do the second half of the day.
What?
And then now... And now I know some wedding videography companies offer it as an add-on. I'm like, they're probably selling it for like, I don't know, maybe like $500. Just pay the person like just above minimum wage. Like, who's not going to take that up, right? That really feels like a race to the bottom. And it's stuff that companies like ours wouldn't take on because it just doesn't make sense, right? Like,
No.
And the quality gets worse as you get to the race to the bottom.
That's
well, especially in that sense, right? Because like not everyone's going to know. Everyone might be able to shoot Instagram content or like shoot video on their phone.
That's right.
But there have been times that like some of these shoots where I've seen some of these content creators, the way they shoot, and I'm like, what are they framing? Like, they're not shooting the important thing properly.
Well, the smart ones, you know what they do, Kirill? They copy you. They see how you shoot and then they'll hop in and do the exact same shot.
Like those ones in that sense. But I was working with one last weekend where I asked her even afterwards, like, how long have you been in the industry? And she's like, oh, like about a year. And I'm like, at certain points I was like watching what she was doing when I didn't need to grab any footage, and I'm like, it's like everything, like the subject is like in the far lower left corner of the phone and there's like nothing of interest. I'm like, you're not going to be able to see anything. Like, what's going on?
I know. It's churn and burn at the moment with a lot of that stuff. I think that's another, like, a whole another industry. I wouldn't even call that production. It's just really churn and burn content.
That's really just marketing.
Yeah, it's not video anymore, really.
But the thing is, I believe that people in professionals in marketing don't even know the difference as much anymore. So you've got this whole like mixed bag of like what is required. Like, you've got companies, I'm telling you now, that would go the churn and burn over the long lasting production because it's cheaper. They don't need expensive production because they just want to quickly create like social media reels. I mean, I can tell you right now, a lot of government agencies do it. Corporates, the whole lot.
Really? Okay, because while you were saying that, I was like, okay, I was going to interrupt and say, like, well, it's probably just going to be like restaurants and small shop owners.
No. Look, I believe, we're in Melbourne, because, you know, I'm in Melbourne. The industries are tough here. Like, it's not, you know, we're not, I think there's a bit of a struggle here. I don't know if you call it like a minor recession or something like that. I could say that it probably is. So if there's big, major budget cuts, things have to be changed. You know, to spend money on a production that's done professionally is not sometimes their first priority. So they're going to look at cheaper ways of doing it. And that might be hiring someone at a cheap rate full time that does social media, video creation, photography, editing, graphic design, content writing, motion graphics. I don't even know where to end this. And they're the ones that get burnt out.
Now you're talking about an entirely different version of the industry, which is the vendor, hire someone in-house and exploit the hell out of them.
Yeah, you know? That's it.
That was it a big thing during the pandemic. That was like a big thing. Yeah. But then that died out after the pandemic because then I think they started seeing the results.
It was terrible. There was
happening.
It probably is, but like those are also companies that are probably also not evolving, right?
He's talking about government. So yeah, I guess that.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Of course, with the government, right?
Governments don't really evolve. Let's be honest.
They just waste money.
It's so hard to know, why. I believe it's just budget. It's like, all right, we're gonna give someone 60K a year to do everything. They can't do everything. They're young, they're a junior. They get thrown all this work, and I really feel sorry for some of those people because they you can't be a jack of all trades. You're a master of none. You're trying to, you know, I couldn't do it. I know what I'm good at, and I'm not good at every part of production because I know that, you know, there's specific skills you need for parts of production. And that's as a professional production. But, you know, to be like a marketer of all trades is so difficult. So the industry's changed and evolved so much that I think generally businesses in general believe that one person can do it all because they just see it as general marketing. Video, content creation, social media, write content, ChatGPT now, just chuck it in, write some content, write some blogs. Look, everything. I'm talking like, you know, write scripts for your videos, the whole lot. Use your phone with a mic. It's fine. It doesn't matter. So, you know, I think there is a space for that, but I think it's a very tough one for the people working in those industries, in that role. Because a lot of work has to be done. And I hear a lot of people do turn over those sort of roles. So, you know, it's...
The other thing that a lot of people don't realize is that in those roles, it's also very slow as a result of that. Because if you're having someone doing everything, you're not going to be getting things in a timely manner. You know, like videos can take 2 to 3 weeks at minimum, right? Like, and if someone's doing that and they're on salary, you know, there's 8 hours a day,
I love how we're like, just theorizing on something we don't really know.
No, I'm mentioning this
looking at it from like our the outsider perspective.
I'm hearing this. I'm mentioning this because like I've heard about this from people that actually did work as in-house marketers and people, and they were telling me how not only was it slow for them, but it was also slow from the other people in the organization. Like for some reason. When it's their own in-house people, it takes them forever to review content, to give feedback, to give briefs, to help actually move the projects along, even if they're doing photo or graphic design. Yeah. Whereas, you know, when they're actually putting money towards a specific video project with a vendor, there is a clear, specific goal and objective in mind. And that's why we execute things in a timely fashion, right? Whereas in-house people, it's like, it's like having a pool. I love using this example. This is like having a swimming pool in your condo. You know it's always there, but you never end up using it.
You know what it's like? It's like when these companies outsource a good chunk of their stuff to India, and then it goes to hell. And then they're like, oh, yeah, I guess we got to bring everything back here.
The amount of times I've heard this and the complications of that. I mean, that's why I don't outsource to overseas editors and stuff like that, because I know the amount of management involved. And I think, you know, there's reasons reasons for hiring people in the industry locally. And reasons not to. Yeah, locally and not locally. I mean, there's reasons for both. I think there's a space for everything. But I really run my business through quality production. I don't want to go through the headaches of going, you know, showing clients a half-assed project. Oh, here's an edit. And it's like, that's not what we wanted. I wasn't on the brief. And I'm like, oh, crap. I didn't have time to review that properly because the guys that did were overseas and it's just become a mess. And, you know, like it just becomes a whole mess. And then it gives you a bad rep. Like, why bother? To save a buck? I mean, yeah, you might make a few $1,000 extra, but is it really worth it? I think our reputation's more important than making money on the short term. So, but coming back to like, I'm just thinking back to what you were saying before where internal people, it's tough for them. I've noticed now there's a trend between getting the production companies to come in when they need them, working with internal videographers or you know, marketers that do everything. And I've worked with them before, which is sometimes really, really good. It could work to be a great partnership because they support us. And we support them. And I've never had bad experience, to be fair, with people that work internally. I think, to be honest, they're breathing again. Like, oh, thank God we've got you. Take the load, you know, take the load. So it's, you know, and they've finally got a budget to work with so they can get some of that to you. So, you know, it's a bit of fresh air for them. So I feel for some of those guys that work in the industry internally. It's tough. And you know, what else is there? You know, in this industry, what do? You either get a full-time job somewhere, you run your own business, be a freelancer. What else? You know, it's a very hard industry.
Here's another funny thing I just thought of, though. Say they have like an internal video person or marketer, right? Who puts up the equipment? You know, What happens there? Because those things
they buy,
are not
cheap. Yeah. They buy it through the company, and it's all
but
like...
But that's yeah, my point. They want to save money, hiring someone full-time.
But they have to buy their own gear.
Tens of thousands of dollars on equipment.
No, and no, they like, get... No, they'll get, like... I remember talking to one guy like this. They're like, I only got... Because we're talking about gear, and it's like, I saw what you guys have on set. I'm like, why don't you get that through the company? And he's like, oh, they only gave me $10,000 to work with for the year. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be tight.
That's what I mean. Like,
I'm telling you now, they don't give them good... There's barely good gear. You're not gonna, the budgets they use for gear purchasing is tiny. Like, I've seen, you know... the worst cameras, the worst lighting, the worst audio, but it doesn't matter. They're working on those really tight budgets. So that's where, you know, I think it's good to have that the comparison. You know, when they can do stuff like that internally, they'll do it. But if they need high end productions, they'll come to us. There has to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, unless they're big, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, like that's why it's like. It's kind of fine that they're all kind of doing it, even if it's like crappy content, because it's like they're still doing it. So they're getting their feet wet and, you know, practicing. So now they know what it looks like when it's bad. It'll be easier to sell us to,
you know,
to these people.
Yeah.
So.
There's a time and place for everything. I think sometimes you need that really low quality content or when I say low quality, just like mobile content. There's a space for that. I believe that, you know, some companies should be just churning some content through for their stories. Definitely. Definitely. But when I talk to clients, it's more like, okay, do you want a video on your website that lasts 5 to 10 years? I've got clients that have videos we created for them 10 years ago, and they still look better than a lot of productions that are made today. Because we used really good gear back then, good lighting, the whole lot, good audio, well produced. So our clients get bang for buck. It's all about that longevity. I believe that's when they should use a production agency like ours or yours or anyone in the same field as us, because there is a space for good quality content, definitely. TV ads, cinema ads, which is not so, I guess, prominent anymore, but, you know, it's a good mix.
Are you doing anything like what have you done this year to kind of like recession proof your business, I guess?
Well, I actually had a really, really big year. I was a little bit worried because I was out of the business for a few months. I actually had a surgery in the last year in December. So I was out for a while. I was in hospital for about a month. So it was tough. What I do to make my business run is my team is number one priority. Like, have a really good team. Like I was saying before, there's no reason to cheap out on this stuff, because I believe you'll fail. And my goal in the business is to ensure that we produce the best quality content no matter who is available. So when I was out, I had to make sure that everything was going as it was. The marketing spend, the kind of stuff we're sending out, the productions. But I was very strategic when I had my operation. I was fortunate to actually choose when I wanted to get it done, which was middle of December, which was that sort of holiday period. I didn't know how long it was going to take me to recover. I had back surgery. I'm very fortunate. I'm very lucky now. I can actually get up and start filming again. But, you know, I'm not doing anything heavy. I do have a great team, like I said, though, so I can rely on my team to do stuff for me. I also believe that what we have done is create some new, well, when I say new, I believe it's like refreshed branding and content. So I've always looked at making us look fresh. So last year we did do a revision of our brand, our website. And I spent more money than I ever did on our online visibility, because I knew that if we don't, we'll be eaten up by our competitors. And when I say that, I do have my trusted clients and clients that keep coming back because they love what we do. But to grow in this industry, we have to be above all that. Reason being, you know, and everyone knows this in the industry, sometimes it's project to project. You might have a client that was absolutely amazing to work with. They love us. We love them. It was one good project, but that's all they needed. And unfortunately, if it's not ongoing revenue, ongoing work, we got to be on the scout. We got to be on the hunt to get new business. And I've got, I know, people to pay. I've got a studio, marketing spend. I've got a family. I've got two kids. Like, I can't just sit down and wait for the work to come in. I need to be proficient in our marketing and our sales. So I believe that, you know, being on top of the game in a sense of thinking forward, and I always think forward, like, what am I doing next year? Yeah, we've got all these videos that we're producing the next 6 months, which is great. We've got these clients, blah, blah, blah. But what's on for next year? Okay, cool. I'm going to niche on this. I'm going to do some marketing on that. I'm going to up the spend on this. I'm going to down the spend on that. What is it that we're going to do every year? And I believe that if you're not on top of that game, you're going to fail. You know, we don't know if we're going to be in business next year, but the best thing we can do right now is forecast what we want to do and how we're going to make that happen.
Yeah, you really need to hustle in this industry because, like you said, sometimes, like, a lot of the clients we work with are great people to work with, but not every business or medium-sized business has $100,000, $200,000 to spend a year on content. You know, there's maybe like a couple projects here and there that they need, and then you might help them two, maybe three times a year on average, right? Yeah. So the key is to, like you said, find more business to fill up that other time, right? Like, maybe you might get lucky with some clients where you have a consistent, like, say, quarterly report video that you have to do with them. So, like, you know, consistently every year you're going to do four videos for them with like a big AGM event or something to culminate the year. Great. Then you have other clients, you know, for example, that have a yearly conference like that comes in like clockwork, or so you need to create a certain amount of deliverables every year, and that's it. You know, like, you have to, you have to keep trying to find the different business, because like you said, sometimes there's a little bit of turnover where people don't need videos anymore. Like that one client, some of those clients you said that have been using your content for 10 years, like that's 10 years you haven't worked with them.
That's right. That's right. Sometimes so, it's better not to make great content.
I was gonna say,
you gotta do like just you gotta find that sweet spot, right? You know, it's not true, the race that. To the bottom, it's the race
next time,
it's the
next race time to the 75. Next time, buy the second best camera on the market.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Lower it to 5 years. Every 5 years, they do a new video.
Yeah, totally. Do 8K totally. If your camera can do 8K, keep shooting 4K. Yeah. You know, and then maybe shoot 4K. Later,
HD is fine. HD is fine. Yeah. I totally agree. Yeah. True. Sorry.
When you said you're trying to like forecast or like get new business for like, you know, at the end of those 6 months and everything. Are you doing outreach, or are you just focusing on like SEO, AdWords spend?
We do a mix actually. So we do a bit of outreach, like LinkedIn and stuff like that. What I've done more of lately, actually, because of my surgery as well, because I couldn't do a lot of heavy lifting, was networking, joining more networking groups, spending a fair bit of money. I mean, that could cost as much as SEO, if not more, because you're spending money on not just joining these groups, but you're spending money on dinners, Ubers to the city, running events. Around, you know, drinks, you know, you're having, events. It adds up. So it's a great social life, don't get me wrong, but it's tiring. It's so tiring, especially when you've got a young family. So, you know, I believe that you've got to have the combination of networking, online marketing, which is a mixture of outreach, also, bringing in business through, you know, your SEO and your AdWords channels. Social media is a great way to look good. I don't believe, for me, social media in itself has brought in a lot of business, but it has helped us look good. And what I mean by that is, I can go to someone and say, go check out our Instagram, go check out our LinkedIn, because by them seeing the posts and the things that we've been doing, they have an idea that we're pro, we're good at what we do, and we're actually live. We're not dead. Because a lot of businesses out there that don't do socials, if you look at their socials, to be honest, you know, you go to a website and you're like, oh, these guys are great. Let's have a look at their socials, see what they're up to. You go to their socials and they haven't posted anything for 2 years. You're like, are they even alive? Are they doing business? And it's a bit of a turnoff. It is. Like, I believe anyone that you know, if you're hiring someone to do something for you. So I think social media is like an add-on to our industry. I'm talking the corporate field, in weddings and stuff like that, different. Yeah. Like, I think that is, you can build your business on socials so well.
It's the opposite.
Depending on the industry, corporates in itself. Yeah, that's right. LinkedIn's really good for corporate though. I think that's a great way to keep people up to date, but I don't see that as being a main source of business, of bringing in new business. I think it's a great, you know, it's really something that makes your marketing look great, on top of all the elements you have to put together.
Yeah, and it's also to keep yourself top of mind for people within your network and people that you've worked with, because sometimes also clients and people that you've worked with in the past, they might have worked for one company, then they moved on to another organization, and you know, they might have, not that they would necessarily forgotten, but it's like, you know, sometimes you just need reminders of other people in your network, you know, and you know, just even like reaching out to them and letting them know that you're still active, seeing if they need any help. And and I find that sometimes posting even something as simple as like a photo, like a certain behind the scenes photo of yourself, like working on set, that's different from what people are used to seeing. You know, it does drum up some engagement on LinkedIn. Like I noticed that recently with the few photos that I posted.
Yeah, it does. Sure.
And it's funny that you mentioned that it's so key to do that. And then I was immediately thinking of some of the, you know, those like really big ad agencies that have like 20, 30, 40, 50 people, and then their Instagram is like 80 followers, and they posted like three images. It's like the complete opposite as well.
I know. It's so true.
I'm curious about the outreach. So, I was going to say, can we dive a little deeper into the outreach? Yeah. Because that's the one part one thing I'm focusing on this year, and I just want to pick your brain because you do it. So like what do you do for outreach? Do you like pick like a specific industry, and then within that industry you find your businesses, and like what are your steps exactly?
Yeah, look, I mean, funny you mentioned that. I know a lot of people, like marketing managers and stuff like that, and to just give you an insight, it happens so much, and you got to be really careful, because to give you an example, the people I know in the industry that are on the other end of us that are, you know, needing production companies, they could get like 10, 20 messages a day of video people and agencies trying to like, just, you know, we've got a special deal. Do you want corporate video? Da, 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 da. And they're like, shut up. Too many people. Like it is that bad. It's so much going on. There's a lot of noise out there, right? So I don't want to be one of those. And I've done a bit of that. We've done like, you know, touching base with people that need, you know, do you need video? We're a production company. To be honest, if they really were interested, they can just go online and find someone or just ask someone for a referral. So I think you got to not annoy people. But at the same time, it's important to do outreach. And when I mean outreach for us now, it's finding a solution for their problems. If there is a specific niche that I feel is needed right now, and to be honest with you, right now I found a better niche for us, and you're gonna laugh, but it's actually training videos, because everyone's concentrating on marketing so much.
Yeah, I was like internal stuff, right? Yeah, I was thinking exactly that stuff for us.
But the top tier training videos, I'm talking, like massive organizations, from, you know, large government agencies to huge companies that need to have really specific high-end training. Yeah. Something that can't be made with one person. You need a full-blown team. And we've done this countless of times for clients, and I've done it so well. I don't want to blow my own trumpet here, but I just don't know how other agencies can do it the way we do it, because we've created a process that works. And it's been fine-tuning that process so well that we understand how to do it so well in a time-efficient, spend-efficient way with a good team without having the problems that most companies will face. So right now, we are going to niche down to training. Not to say we don't do marketing. We do marketing videos so well. Like I love testimonial videos and stuff like that. The problem we have with testimonials and stuff like that right now is every freelancer wants to do it, and it's on the cheap. So it's like, you know, yes, we produce really high-end promotional videos, but there's only a certain client that wants to spend that money for that. Brand videos, there's a lot of competitors in that space too, which we do really well. So that's another tough one. Events, look, I love event videos, but the market's shifted as well. Since COVID, it's been tough. And I feel for the event space, because their budgets have really, really tightened. You know, some of the biggest productions I ever produced were the, you know, events back before COVID, like the Melbourne Cup. Melbourne Cup's the biggest event in Australia. Yeah. My business covered the whole thing with 20 staff. We same day editing, multiple camera operators, videos that were on screen on the day with, you know, you know, so many people at these events. If you see the Melbourne Cup online, you'll see what I'm saying. And it was incredible what we did. I created a process with the great team that just produced video that was incredible and fast paced, that people couldn't believe that the edits and the video was being done on the same time, you know? So I've done all that, but everything shifted. So I love it all. But I for now we are niching down to the training because there's more of a space in that at the moment. There's a bit of a gap in that market. And anyone can try it. I mean, anyone goes, oh, I can do training videos. And yes, you can. But the way I've developed this process with the team that have created a specific skill means we can create, like, you know, 10. We've done it now. We've just created 10 training videos over 10 minutes each within a month. And I'm talking like 10 days of filming, edits to be produced, checked over, 3 rounds, voiceovers, scripts, the whole lot. Scenes to be created, shot list, the whole lot. If anyone can do that, I'll say good on you, because it's not easy, but we can do it. And that's what I mean by fast-paced, high-end quality. Like, if you watch these, they look better than some of the promotional videos you watch. They are so good. Like, we are so proud of our training videos right now. So I don't know. Like, for me, when I got something in my head saying, you know what, I really believe in this product, I know I can market the crap out of that. Or I can talk and sell that just from being passionate about doing it.
It's easier to sell. I was thinking about this lately. I'm like, because I was driving through an industrial area and I was like, wow, there's so many businesses here. But I was like, not all of them would need video content if it's going outside of the business. But I'm like,
yeah, but internally.
Internal, they would all need it. And I was like, what could they do? And I'm like, well, training. And I was like, it's such an easy thing to sell because you would just go like, how long does it take one of your guys to get trained? Like, in terms of like having to explain something, even something as simple as like, what are like the benefits packages? Like what does a benefits package include? Right. And it's like, okay, well, if it takes your person, your HR person, an hour to explain that.
Yeah.
How many
employees
you have like 100. Okay. So that's 100 hours. Yeah. So you can put a dollar value on it pretty easily. Right.
You can. Yeah. Look, I think training is hard though, because people do it internally. So you're going to have the competition of the internal guys just cutting it up and filming it, because some of it's really simple. I think as a production company, you need to do the more difficult stuff, the stuff that they can't do internally at all. Like the stuff that we produced like last year and this year, we won tenders that are, you know, for training videos for the CFA, for example, which is the fire authority, country fire authority. So they've got, you know, how to like set up their every step of the way to set up their fire brigades, you know, like going out with their trucks, every single step, and the way it's filmed and cut and produced has done, it's to perfection, right? And now we're doing the same for a massive logistics company. How to, you know, get your truck set up so there's no dangerous goods falling on the road from their on the trucks, on the back of their trucks. How to ensure that, you know, the truck drivers know how to set up their trucks. All the parts of logistics, those big, you know, from anything from these called, you know, these massive machines to like, you know, riding your, you know, driving their forklifts, everything from the specific like detail. If that's not filmed right and cut right and produced right, they're going to have massive problems in the company. It is, because we're talking about lives here. Yeah, exactly. We're talking about lives, and they want these videos to last for a very long time. So, you know, there is a market there, but I believe that it's not an easy market unless you get the production and the process right. I love producing videos in our studio as well on the green screen. That's another great way to get, you know, using the teleprompter and stuff like that. I think that's another great, we've done a lot of that during COVID. It was great. I think, you know, for me right now, and I don't know yourself guys, like if you find something that someone else can't do, do that. Because all we're going to be doing is competing against the next person that holds the camera.
Yeah. Well, everyone that gets into this industry usually does it for the more glamorous type jobs, right? And we don't get us wrong. Like, we always love doing a super creative project every now and then, you know, which is like maybe, I mean, I guess it depends on the niche of work that you do, but maybe
the
it could be
super
like
sexy videos.
Like 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like maybe 20% of the content you do is super sexy videos, as you said.
Yeah.
And 80% of it is like corporate internal content. But the other funny thing I was just thinking about is that if you're doing a lot of internal content, like these training videos for a lot of clients, you're also kind of holding on to your work product, because no one will, like, that's not content that's going to be shared externally, right?
Well, it's so not it's his not only like, focus, right? That's like
no, I know, but I'm just saying that that is like an example of how
that's a pay the bills type of gig.
Yes, but what I'm saying is like Daniel was saying that like that he has a certain process and a certain type of style of content for these internal videos that you know that is great quality, and the beautiful thing is other people, other content creators are not going to be able to copy it because it's internal and it's private, right? So there is that benefit in that sense as well. But yeah, those, like you said, those are the projects that pay the bills, you know, not the most glamorous, but you know.
No, they're not.
People
they're
need not. Them.
Yeah, they're right. I mean, I think they're glamorous for what they're for. You know, if you compare our training videos to ones I've seen done from other production companies, other people, oh man, like you, I think you guys would really, not just love it, but I think you'll understand what I mean. Because
you gotta send me like an unlisted link after this. I'm curious now. You're like,
Yeah. I'm really talking it up now. I know I gotta be careful what I'm saying. I'm confident in that, in saying that, because we produce them like we produce our marketing videos. That's how we see it.
Yeah.
Why level it down when you can produce high quality content? People love to watch. You know, I don't think everyone wants to see internally 10-minute videos that look like, can I say it, dog shit? You know, like out of focus, shaky cam, a bad voiceover that just made on a microphone on a laptop, not engaging. It's a PowerPoint presentation with this, oh, some of it's absolutely awful. And you think about these companies, these multi-million, billion-dollar companies that are producing this stuff, their employees are going, what the hell? And they get so bored. They don't listen to the training, and then there's problems later on. So there's, you got to think, it, for them, it's an investment to get that done right. Where marketing is another kind of investment. Marketing has, and unfortunately with marketing, and I find this is an issue, is marketing managers are really finding it tough. Like I said, I know a lot of them, and their budgets are getting cut down every year. They're forced to cut down on what they can do. They're forced to look at other vendors because they can't afford what they could afford before. So I know, and I feel the pain. So I think it's a fine balance between getting the right clients, but the right sort of niche and kind of productions as well.
So to our listeners and viewers, that confidence that Daniel had in pitching his sales pitch right now in his training videos, that's how you
that's
do
what
it.
You need. That's what you need. Be passionate. Be energetic.
He's trying to sell on our show. Work. I'm like, I like it. That's how you do it.
Maybe we need a training video internally, Dario. Like, we should call Daniel now.
I'll give you some
our
tips.
Our training
guys.
Video, Carol, is me yelling at you, going, "Come on, get it done. We need it. We need to send it to the client.
We need to send it off. Yeah.
Where's the edit?
It's in the backlog.
The creative brief. The creative brief was due yesterday. Where is it?
Oh gosh. Or, you know what's funny as well?
No, we can't do a fifth take. Come on. We got the take already. Let's move on.
It's funny you mentioned that. Like, I believe any video you make and produce, no matter if it's training or marketing or whatever, and this is what I love to do, is making the people that are in front of the camera feel amazing and be their best. That's what makes your videos great. Because you're utilizing most of their stuff most of the time. If you can coach someone to be the best they could be, no matter what you do, we do a lot of photography as well. I never mentioned that. We just done like 3 big photo shoots in the last week for a big government agency to do all their marketing photography, including other stuff we're doing for them as well, explainer videos and the whole lot.
Nice.
But, you know, same thing. I love those shoots. I actually have a lot more fun sometimes doing those marketing photography with my team, or if it's just myself or whatever, because you're just like getting the best out of people and making these photos look freaking amazing. You know, like it's a real combination of working with people and loving that sort of, oh wow, look how great that looks, and having that passion still. And it's funny, like I've been in this industry forever and I still feel so passionate about making really good looking quality products. I think that's what keeps it going. If you don't have that, you might as well just die and flip and go somewhere else. There's no point doing this unless you're passionate about it.
Yeah. You got to have fun. You got to have fun, and you got to find how you can have fun in like some of the more air quote mundane type work that you have to do sometimes, you know, like I find like every now and then there's like something that we're doing that we're capturing something, you know, I get excited just seeing like how I know it's going to fit well in the video. And when I know Like I like shooting until I know that it's gonna work well in the edit.
He gets a look in his eye and it gets a little scary sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be like this. Oh my god! Like everyone has a shooter face.
We were filming together on Saturday. Girl, at the church, you looked so serious. I wanted to take a picture of him. He looked so scary. I'm like, yo, bro, chill.
I'm making sure it's recording. Yes, it's recording.
He looked angry. I'm like, bro, relax, man. Church. They're getting married, bro.
Filming at church is the worst. That pan, if you don't get that pan at the right time when they move out of there, or that priest moves out of the way,
At this, like, look, he had this his eyebrows look like Vegeta's eyebrows. He's sweating too. It looked creepy.
Meanwhile, it's like I've been there, man. Ever.
Yeah, of course it is. Been there. Completely get it. I love that. I love that. So nah, that's yeah. that's why we love we, what we do.
We get manifested. We get manifested with our content. It's almost like we're the talent, you know, in a way.
Yeah. Oh gosh,
we should get people that's to shadow funny. Us on set just to it'll just be like me making all these like serious and weird faces and Dario having the most blank expression
that would go viral
when he's filming.
So like videographers
okay
impression okay, of the videographer
you gotta be chill when you're filming Kirill. You can't be all like
he's got like a mime face though when he films to the point where I'm like, where's the expression? Where's the
the
joy?
What am I gonna do? You smile? Now they're gonna look at me smile. Look into the camera. Don't look at me. Why are you looking at the camera?
Exactly. That's all having my producer on set. I'm like, you're speaking to him. I'm not even here. I hide behind the camera if I have to. Unless I'm producing, different story. Yeah. But if I'm like, if I've got my producer on set, you're talking to him. And like, it's like funny because I might jump in. I'm like, no, don't look at me. Look at him. It's like, you know, it's getting the energy right at the right time. It's so hard.
It's so true. Like, I know how it is sometimes on set like that. It's like, yeah, don't look at me. Don't look at the camera unless I tell you to look at the camera. I say that so often.
I like to go like, why are you looking at me? Look at the camera.
You can say it like a Joe Pesci sort of like, you know, any sort of arrogance. Hey, don't look at me. Oh, like, yeah, you know, you can do it, Kirill. Yeah, you got the, I think you can do it. You can pull
you
it off.
You got me on a pay no mind list.
So it's like, don't look at me.
I love it. Now, these will go viral.
Yeah. These are little new social contents for creators.
Now you're gonna do, you know, the whole like, you think I'm funny? You can do it.
Yeah. What do you mean I'm funny? I'm here to make you laugh. I'm here to amuse you.
That's exactly what we're doing.
That in front of the mirror for the last 10 years.
It's like we've done this before.
Probably,
this is literally
probably not even a joke.
You're talking to me. <It's> like,
you didn't do the eyebrows.
I'm the only videographer here.
You gotta do the frown.
You must be talking to me.
You gotta do the frown.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's good.
Quick, get a marker, put a mole on your cheek over there, and then do it.
Yeah, but
yeah,
I know.
I gotta do method acting.
Oh yeah, you're gonna do it. You're in this, man. You definitely create your own channel here and get yourself viral, like the expressions of a videographer.
He did.
Yeah.
He did a YouTube channel, and then he abandoned it.
Ah, there you go. Something we didn't know.
Everyone started a YouTube channel. Oh yeah, that's a story for another day.
That sounds awesome.
Anyway, so I guess like kind of like getting back to like a little bit more on the business side of things as well. It's like, so now with everything that you've kind of done, like what are some of your goals for this year?
He just told you, weren't you paying attention? That was the last like 20 minutes.
Sorry, that's like usually our standard like end off question. So
girls on autopilot. Sorry, because it's people don't know, but it's 8 o'clock here and it's like 9 a.m.
I've been shooting all day today. I haven't eaten anything either.
Don't complain, okay? You had a gap of like 7 hours in between the time you started and the
time you ended. It was weird. I had to be up at like 6 in the morning to get to a shoot for 8 a.m. downtown. Oh, wow. It was done at 9:30, and then it's like, and then I had to be back down there for 2. It's like, okay, so it's like 4, maybe. Do I go home to work on other stuff for a bit, or do I try to?
Yeah.
It was one of those switch weird off. Gaps in the middle.
It's like a fine line. Like now, in my, like if I have a big day like that, like we did a a pretty big week. We just finished a pretty big week. We had like photo shoots, two video shoots, the whole lot. And, you know, I remember, you know, when I get home, I'm like, I can't rest. I've got a 1-year-old and a nearly 4-year-old. And it's like, oh, man. It's like...
The job never stops.
Yeah, the job never stops when you have two young ones. And it's like, yeah, you know, yeah. And like, especially if like, you know, now it's winter here and my wife was sick. I'm like, I need to pull my game. And like, you get home, I'm like, oh, it doesn't matter if you shoot, but I've just got to get my energy up again to... Yeah, yeah.
Get over there, 20
I'm like,
degrees.
What, a breeze? A slight breeze?
No, no. It's actually quite cold in Melbourne at the moment. I mean, maybe not compared to you guys. I completely get it. I'm not going to compare. But for us, it's cold. Like, it goes down to like 5
degrees. He just has to wear a light jacket.
No.
My friend,
but you know what?
Melbourne lives there. He was telling me like it was 5 degrees this week. He's like, yo, it's cold. It's like Toronto. And I was like...
That's our fall.
I was joking. I'm like, well, it's 20 degrees here. Maybe it's a sign you need to move back.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I for you guys, it'd be like summer. You can probably wear shorts and a singlet, but we can't handle it. I tell you what, though, it's not the fact that it's just cold. It's the amount of viruses. Like, everyone is sick. Everyone I know that like is usually got like the best immune system has like just the average cold has wiped them out for 2 weeks. So it's weird. Like, Melbourne just copped
a hard. You're
going
to go into lockdown again.
I was going to say.
They're heading into lockdown again.
Give me the viruses. So funny.
They got fevers here in Canada. Measles. There's like a big measles outbreak that's going around.
Oh really?
No.
Yeah.
That's bad. It's bad. And I think like now, especially with shoots, it's so hard to like pre-organize. You got like, you know, staff that are sick. Like when we went to our shoot last week, the main marketing manager was sick. She couldn't come out on site, but we had it all covered. And, you know, she had her other assistant, colleague there. But, you know, you don't know, you know, and it's really hard to organize shoots when everyone's getting sick.
Oh, here I noticed like people started coming back to work sick. Like I've seen it a couple of times.
Yeah. I've been like, really lucky. Touch
get
wood.
Away from me, man. I got shoots coming.
Get away.
Get me sick.
That's what happened. Yeah. My wife was so sick last week. I'm like, you just can't get me sick. I got
stay
so
away
much
from
on.
Me.
Stay away.
Which is when they tell you after the fact. So like after you've done working with them, they're like, I've been sick lately. And you're like, you tell me now? Like I shook your hand and everything. Like
shook hand, touched my camera, touched
touched my face.
Sneezing on you without like, hey, what are you sick?
Stay safe.
That was one thing I liked about the pandemic was that when people got sick, they stayed home.
Yeah, now you have to go to work. Nice. You got stuff to do. Yeah, I know.
Out the window that went.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know what's funny? You say, Kira, like, you know, I believe right now survival mode, just get through this cold season, you know, as we call it cold season. I'm not going to compare to you guys. But, you know, get through this winter season. Brisk, yeah.
Apparently,
Melbourne's closer to Antarctica than we are to Queensland, apparently. I saw this thing online. So we got some cold coming through, you know. It's the cold Antarctic winds, you know. And when we film outside, it is chilly. Like, we're rugged up. Like, it's like we're dying out there. But, yeah.
Wait a minute. How are you closer to the Antarctic? Sorry. I thought you said
Queensland.
You're saying
Melbourne Queensland. Is more south of Australia.
I confused Antarctic Ocean with Atlantic. I'm like, wait a minute. How is he closer to the...
No.
Clearly, we're needing food. That's what's happening right now.
Oh, I ate you then, yeah.
No, I haven't had the, I literally got home like 15 minutes before the call. So I haven't had the chance to eat anything yet.
The time difference, yeah. Don't worry.
Let's keep this going another hour.
Yeah, let's just get him going. Let's see how long he can go for. He might get more impersonations coming out of him. He starts getting delusional and stuff.
Yeah, I just start hallucinating a little bit. This is what we do for our listeners.
Well, is there anything else that you'd like me to speak about? I'm happy to chat about anything. Like, well, you know,
we could let's end off with Kirill's Gambit impersonation.
My Gambit impersonation?
The guy from
X-Men?
What's it called? Deadpool 3. What was the guy? Channing Tatum's character. Is that Gambit? What's that guy's name?
Oh my god! Oh yeah. How did that go?
I'm about to make a name for myself.
I'm about to make a name for myself.
Why is he Irish? You screwed it up.
That's the hunger. That's the hunger talking at that point.
Okay. Yeah,
I just finished watching Mobland. Have you guys seen Mobland? I just finished watching. It's so good.
Is it good?
Yeah. It's really good.
Oh, is that
with
Sly Stone?
Tom Hardy. And
is it a show or
Pierce Brosnan? isn't it? He's like the mob.
I think I saw some promo photos for that. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. I just finished it.
Decent ratings.
This is the stuff we need to get into, guys. High in production, yeah? No.
Yeah. We need to get these AAA actors on our shoots.
You know what? Season one 100%. Of Internal Video, season two, you know, like Bank One, season one, Bank Two, season three. We'll start selling it like that, you know, like gold, so exactly. Silver, but it's like season one, season two.
YouTube channel. Hey, you know what? The thing about Cobra Kai, I mean, I know you got the actors, but Cobra Kai started on YouTube, on their YouTube channel. And then they went to Netflix. You got to think, like, even if you don't have like AAA actors, but you got decent actors, and like you can start something that is a little bit different and some compelling content, you never know, you can get picked up. I don't know much about the industry.
The Cobra Kai was based on the Karate Kid, though.
I know.
What is it with production company owners that like hit the 20-year mark and then now they're like, I need to start creating
my
own?
Because
you're another one. Because like everyone that's brought this up, how they're going to start creating their own OG content. It's always they've been in business at least 20 years.
It's a revolution.
They got bored.
They got bored. They're like, what else? You know, like, I always think about, like, what am I going to do after this? I'm like, I don't think I can do anything after this. Retire. This is it for me.
This is our career, guys.
I got a young family. I got a young family. It's not going to happen. I've made myself, you know, I've situated myself like, I live only 5 minutes away from the studio here. We've done this, you know, strategically, like everything's all set. I'm actually gonna renovate this studio this year sometime. I've been waiting for my recovery from my surgery so I can do a bit more work. So we're gonna just knock down some walls, make it one bigger studio and just do some more stuff in here. I really wanna do like podcasts in here, maybe even rent it out. Just change, you know, the whole podcasting like you guys are doing, it's great. And but having it in here. Yeah, just evolve. Might not be a big winner financially, because you know, I know podcast is a different kind of business, but even if we do something a little bit different on the side, like you said, evolve. I'm just thinking of, you know, thinking forward. So you never know. You never know. And look, I there's always going to be content to be created. There's always stuff that has to be created. But do we still fit in the market? And how is the question?
That is a great sentiment. And I think that's a great high to end off. Ponder that question,
everybody. He really wants to go eat. I'm just happy he didn't say that the standard templated thing of I'm gonna make a documentary. Those are like the last like 10 people said, oh, I'm gonna make a documentary now.
Yeah,
it's always documentary. Hey, man. They always like resort to that.
I got mates that are in the industry that call me up, man, we gotta do a documentary. I'm like,
it's always documentary.
On what?
On but, what?
Like, who's gonna? And then on top of that, like we need
there's
funding.
A lot of work that goes into that. There's a lot. Yeah. Of work that goes into that, but
you know, where are we gonna get that 100 grand to pay the guys? But anyway, that's another story. You know, I would love to do something like that. And I think this is another thing: how and why. If the budget is there, anything is possible. I think. Is the budget there? That's another question for you guys to wrap up.
What came first, the budget or the production?
The budget.
I like that.
That's what it is nowadays, right?
I know. You want to create. They're like, oh, create the production, then we'll see if we can pay you. Like, no, it doesn't work like that.
That's just short films.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. 100%.
Yeah. But... anyways, Daniel, thanks again for joining us on Creators Grab Coffee. Like, I like how we got to shoot the shit a little bit towards the end. Yeah. And real
fun. Had an absolute ball. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. And I hope we get to catch up soon. Maybe we'll have another catch up in a year or so, see where everything's at.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, definitely. No, we'll definitely keep in touch and shoot the shit like the last time when we almost did this recording, but someone was in their kitchen instead of their own studio, so I won't name names.
Wasn't ready. Great to chat, guys.
Thanks, Daniel. Listeners and viewers, this concludes the end of the free episode, and now for our Patreon listeners, we're going to continue for another 2 hours. Kirill, don't leave just yet. We're gonna keep this going.
Enjoy, guys.
Keep going.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks
guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Creatives Grab Coffee. Please make sure to follow and engage with us on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, YouTube, and your favorite podcast app.
Creatives Grab Coffee is created by Labs Productions, a video production company based in Toronto, Canada.
Creatives Grab Coffee is also sponsored by...
My name is Miran. Welcome to Canada Film Equipment. We are a boutique rental house based in Toronto. We are here to help you guys out with all production sizes. Feel free to contact us to get a quote if you are a production house and you're looking for lighting, camera packages, or lighting and group band packages. You can see our contact information in the link below. We are more than happy to help you guys out. Make sure you follow and subscribe to creativesgrabcoffee.com. Thank you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Matt. Welcome to Audio Process. We are a boutique audio company doing location sound, sound design, post sound, ADR, Foley. We service equipment. We do all your audio needs here in Toronto. We got you covered. Come on down, audioprocess.ca. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, and all of the other internet things to creativesgrabcoffee.com. They'll be waiting for you. I'll be waiting for you. And we're all gonna have a real good time.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.